Welcome to the Geeky Grandma with an Encouraging Nudge podcast. Hi, my name is Jill McCarthy from Central New York State, and this is our
26th
podcast, and I'm so glad you're here.
Hello, ladies. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world today. This is Jill McCarthy coming to you live from Central New York, and I have Estelle Park from Down Under in Queensland today. So let me read her bio and then we'll get started. Estelle Park is a mother who writes the life story of her young son, whose unique life transformed the lives of so many around him. A much-loved son dies at age 14, but leaving a remarkably rich and inspiring heritage for all who wish to know his story. She is an author and has published a book, which she has been trying to get out since the time of her writing. Her book kept her busy after her retirement. She is a teacher at Westside Christian College and a former teacher at Groves Christian College. She is from Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, and lives in Caloundra, Queensland. Welcome, Estelle. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, and very glad to be here and to be able to share the story of my son, Cameron.
Yes, and I know most you are listening in our audience, but I'm looking at the picture of Estelle, and then I can see your son, Cameron's picture right beside her ear. So
yes.
Very definitely. I'm sure he whispers in it from time to time.
Even yells.
Oh, okay. Today's story, although the original event of Cameron's death has been a while ago now, this is a tender topic. And I'm going to tell my listeners, if your grief pain is raw, listen carefully when you have the time to think about this. You'll hear some amazing stories about this young man who only was given 14 years on this planet, but his faith walk was so deep and so genuine, and the words from this mother's heart can't help but touch your lives. So the book she wrote is called One of the King's Men, and Cameron, her son, truly was one of the King of King's Men. So get yourself comfortable, get a cup of tea or a coffee or whatever you need, and just listen to her heart as she talks about this young man. And if you don't mind, Estelle, would you mind starting off telling about what happened at Cameron's birth and thereabouts?
Yes, absolutely. Cameron was my third child, and he was 20 days late when they induced his birth. And he was, I knew he was huge. I used to be able to sit cups and plates and all sorts of things on my stomach and still have room left over. But when he was actually got to the stage of being born, he was stuck. They couldn't pull him up and they couldn't pull him down. They couldn't move him anywhere. And the doctors ordered the theatre to give me a caesarean on five different occasions. But each time when they checked me out physically, they said, no, if she has a caesarean, she will die on the table because her lungs will collapse. So eventually, when this child was still not being born, after many, many hours, they decided that the only possible thing to do was to actually cut him up and take him out piece by piece, because they had found that there had been no pulse from him and no heartbeat for 13 hours. Therefore, they said to me, we need to save your life because obviously the baby is dead and we have no other option but to cut him up and take him out piece by piece. And I thought to myself, that's horrific. I didn't know that could even happen. Never mind happen to me. My husband was there at the birth, and I said to him, well, how about you go and ring up the men from church, because right now they will be having their once a month prayer breakfast. Get them to stop eating their breakfast and start praying for the birth of this child, and not in pieces. So he looked very happy to be able to leave the birthing suite and go anywhere else but where he was. And off he went and rang the men up. And then when he was coming back, he said he heard this one great big piercing yell come from me. And that happened when they cut me just hugely in preparation for cutting up this baby. And as my husband came into the birthing suite, the doctor had his back towards us because the nurses were hooking up his Velcro on the back of his gown that he'd put on specifically to begin cutting the baby up. All of the instruments were sitting there on the bench and they looked fairly horrific. But before he could turn around to face me, armed with his instruments, there was shock for everybody because the baby was suddenly born and he nearly landed on the floor because nobody was there to catch him. They were all busily attending to the doctor and his Velcroing gown. So much to the nurse's surprise, she grabbed this child just before he hit the ground and announced that he had the cord around his neck three times and she'd take him off to remove the cord, etc. So she did that, also gave him a couple of puffs of oxygen because he wasn't breathing. And then she brought him back and handed him to me and said, "You have a 10-pound, 2-ounce son, and there appears to be nothing wrong with him. He seems to be all right." So that was Cameron's very unusual and most unexpected birth. Yeah, 10-pound, 2 ounces. Don't I remember that?
Oh, yes. Wow. That's amazing. Here, they couldn't hear a heartbeat. Then the baby was so entrenched in you that they didn't even think they could pull him out, and he just kind of flew out on his own.
Yeah, he was round the wrong way. He was sort of upside down and inside out, but he was fine when he arrived. And we were all much better too, believe you me.
Yeah.
He was born straight into the prayers of those men from church. So I kind of knew this kid wasn't going to be just ordinary. He just wasn't.
No, not from moment one. I read your book, and it, for those that choose to read it, it's such amazement, and it's a pretty quick read, but you could read it whatever pace you wanted, and it was just amazing. And could you tell about Cameron and what would happen to him at nighttime so they get a feel for what this young man was?
Yes. Cameron had a very interesting life. He had an imaginary friend, as I thought, called Sonia. But one of the most amazing things that happened in Cameron's life was that when he was 3 years old, he came out of his bedroom and he's standing next to me in his pajamas. And he said, "Mum, why do they do the pictures of Jesus with the nail prints there and there," pointing to the palms of his hands? He said, "when the nail prints are really there and there," pointing to his wrists. And I said to myself, "Well, this is a three-year-old. How would he know that?" So I said, "Are they, Cameron? How do you know?" And he said, "Mum, when Jesus was in my room last night and he held out his hands and he smiled at me, I saw them, they are there and there in his wrists." Hence the question, why do they do the pictures of Jesus with the nail prints in his hands? So this was Cameron's life. His first indication of being a very different child came, though, when he was 11 months old. He was sitting in his high chair and we were having a special occasion with a few visitors over, a few guests. I think it was his older brother's 5th birthday. And Cameron was 11 months, and he actually gave us all his very first sentence. He was sitting in his high chair, and when there was a lull in the conversation, he tapped the tray of his high chair with his spoon, got everybody's attention, and when they all looked at him, he didn't just say, but he declared, "God's not dead," and he lived his whole 14 years proving that. Yep, that was our boy.
Yeah, wow. And some nights other nights his sleep was interrupted by bright lights in his room.
Yes, he was 13 years old when this happened. He said to me one morning, "Mum, this getting prayed for stuff at church just doesn't work." And I'm thinking to myself, you'd be the last one of my kids I'd expect to hear that from. So I said, "Why, Cameron, what's going on?" And he said, "Mum, I've been prayed for 3 times for insomnia and I still can't sleep." And I said, "Well, why can't you sleep, Cameron?" And he said, "Mum, I can't sleep for the light." And I said, "Oh, well, we can fix that. I'll get some really dark curtain material and I'll get my friend to sew some curtains for you." And he said, "That's a good idea, Mum, considering she sews with a sewing machine and you sew with a stapler." So, yes, she did in fact make him some lovely navy blue curtains which were hung up in his room. He was very pleased to have them. And then the first morning after he'd had one night with his curtains, I went into his room to make sure he was getting up and getting ready for school. And I said, "Cameron, where are you? It's so dark in here. It's like a cave." He said, "I'm here on the side, sitting on the side of a bed, Mum." And I said, "Well, now, Cameron, don't tell me you couldn't sleep." And he said, "Mum, I couldn't sleep." I said, "Well, it won't be because of the light. It's like a cave in here, Cameron. It's so dark." And he said, "Mum, I couldn't sleep for the light." And I said, "How in the world does that happen when it's so dark in here?" And he just looked at me as though I was kind of a bit loopy. And he said, "Mum, when Jesus is in your room all night, he fills it with light and he fills it with power and you just can't sleep." So much for the curtains.
Wow, that must have been how did you take all of that in?
Well, by the time he was 13, I was kind of used to Cameron and the things that he could see and feel and understand in the spirit, which were far greater and far deeper than any of the rest of us could, me included. So when he told you something, you knew it was right because it was going to be proved to be right somehow. And yeah, it was right. He couldn't sleep because of the light.
Wow, that's amazing. We're going to stop right now for a little commercial break. And when we come back, maybe you can tell about his bike riding journey.
Yes, I could do that. Yes.
I hope you're enjoying our guests on this episode. Just wanted to remind you that this episode is being brought to you by the Facebook group Empowering Women, where Jill McCarthy, myself, is the leader. And it is a safe place that facilitates belonging and yet encourages our uniqueness and individuality. Feel free to check it out. The links will be in the show notes. And now, back to the show. And we're back with our guest, Estelle Park, and she's telling us more about the amazing life of her son, Cameron. Go for it.
Yes, Cameron was an athlete. He wasn't very good at maths, and I kind of put that down to the bit of oxygen that he was lacking before and just after he was born. But he was very good at running. He was actually, when he was killed, he was running state times in 50 meters, 100 meters, 200. 400, 800, 1500, 3K, 5K, 8K, and he was a cross-country champion and a cyclist. And when he did his cycling, it wasn't just a little ride here or there. He'd go out to the bush track and he would ride. He'd like to do 100 kilometres at a time so that he would be ready, because he said, "Mum, the leg muscles are very important," and he liked to keep them just, you know, right for his running. Anyway, on this particular occasion, he went out to the bush track and he was riding his mountain bike. And when he came back, he was all flustered looking and his hair was sticking up everywhere. And he said to me, "Oh, Mum," he said, "you won't believe what happened out on the bush track." He said, "I ended up down on my knees praying and thanking God that he'd saved my life. And I wondered what in the world had gone on over on the bush track." And he said that as he was riding along, quite quickly, because he liked to, you know, he liked to be really fast. Yes. He said, "I was riding along really fast all by myself, nobody else there to help me except God." And he said, "As I was coming along round this corner, I saw a sort of like a steel rope, a thin one, strung across the track." And he said, "I knew it'd get me right in the neck if I didn't do something." So he said, "I kind of ducked right down." And he said, "I went under the rope He said, I ducked down because a magpie came just as I was about to collide with this steel rope. And he said, because I had had an attack from a magpie previously, he said, I knew to duck. So he said, I ducked right down and I found when I got off my bike that I had ducked right under this rope. It hadn't touched me at all, hadn't injured me. Nothing had happened. And here I was, all because of a magpie. He said, the first thing I thought was, if it had been my brother Toddy riding along, God couldn't have sent a magpie. Toddy wouldn't have been scared of a magpie. But my goodness, had he sent a grasshopper, yeah, Toddy would have been flat in his face too. But he said, I figured that God sent a magpie because he knew I'd react. And I went straight under the rope. And he said, then I was down on my hands and knees thanking God for the fact that he saved my life, because had it not been for the magpie, I would have suffered a great injury across my throat. He said, it probably would have killed me. So that was Cameron. You didn't have to watch what he was doing. God was watching what he was doing. And his guardian angel, Sonia, was watching everything that happened to that boy. Oh, yeah.
I was just glancing through your book again just before we came on air, and it's like I was down on the ground praying and thanking God. What 13-year-old or whatever age he was at that point would do such a thing? But
Cameron would any day, any time. Yeah.
He knew who was watching over him.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. I could remember him being 2 years old and being in the shopping center with him. And we were in the fruit and vegetable aisle, and I'm standing there holding a cabbage. And he says to me, Mum, let's talk about when Jesus will come back again. And I said, oh, okay, what do you want to tell me about that? And he was talking away there, really, really quite a long conversation for a two-year-old. And then suddenly he stopped and he said, Mum, we've got to stop talking like this. And I'm thinking, oh, how so? It was your idea to talk this way. And he said, Mum, it's because it says in the Bible that we're not expecting him. That's when Jesus comes. And Jesus has probably been standing up and sitting down, standing up and sitting down. And it's all our fault, because every time he goes to get ready to come down, he looks down and he says, oh, those people are expecting me. I'll have to sit down again. And he said, we've probably tired him out, and he's sitting up there waiting until we're not speaking about him and not expecting him, which I thought was pretty good theology for a two-year-old.
Yes, that's yes. For certain. Wow. Is my listeners out there, do you understand why I want you to read this book and why I want you to listen to this story? It's just an amazing child, an amazing life, an amazing circumstance, and you lived this with him every day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. When he was killed and he went home to heaven, that was what I missed the most, you know, getting all this input from Cameron, because it was an ongoing thing. He was never without a story to tell of what had happened or what was going to happen. And whatever he said was going to happen came to pass. Yeah. Wow. Well, just amazing to live with. Yeah. Yeah.
Could you maybe fast forward a little and tell about just before he signed up for the other school?
Yes, Cameron said to me, well, actually, I was in the spa with him up at the Sunshine Coast. We were having a little mini holiday, and he had said to me before we went up there, he said, Mum, I'm going to be going home to heaven soon, and when I get there and people say, well, what were you doing on earth before you came home to heaven? I don't want to have to say to them, oh, I was just going to the local state high school. He said, I'd really, really like to be able to say I was going to a Christian school. But he said, Mum, I know they cost money, and I'll go and get a job up at the golf club as a gardener. I'll go and work there so I've got money to pay for my school fees. I said to him, well, no, you won't. If you really want to go to a Christian school that much, I'll pay for your school fees and away you go. And I said to him, we'll get some prospectus information so you can decide which school you'd like to go to. And he chose Southside Christian College. So very good. That was fine. He had 3 whole days at Southside, and then he was killed in the car accident. But his 3 days impacted the kids at Southside so much that when it was his funeral, they brought a very, very large bus that would accommodate just about all of year 9. They all came on the bus, and they listened to our pastor, Clark Taylor, as he talked at Cameron's funeral, firstly about Cameron, and then because Cameron was an athlete, his message was, who will take the baton of faith from Cameron's hand and run with it? And there were so many of those kids that came out the front and wanted to take that baton of faith from Cameron's hand and indeed run with it.
Wow. Yes. Oh, yes. What an analogy. That's...
Yeah.
Whoa. And it spoke to those people. It spoke to those kids.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Where I go to church at the moment, on my first day there, I chose to sit where I sat in the second front row, and I was sitting next to a lady, and I mentioned about Cameron and his life just briefly to her, and she said, I've heard that story before, not from you, from another lady, a friend of mine, and she said her daughter went to Southside Christian College years ago. Would Cameron have gone there by any chance? And I said, yes, for 3 whole days. And she said, well, the school's still talking about it all this time later. Everybody knows about this past pupil they had for 3 days who was so amazing and who was killed in a car accident and whose death just absolutely transformed year 9 at that school. So Cameron's life is still impacting people.
Yeah, many years down the line.
Yes.
We're going to take another break right now. And when we come back, I would like you to tell about the ripples that have come out from his life, even since he's been gone. I hope you're enjoying our speaker. Remember, you can find out more about her in the show notes, in her bio, and through her links. Remember, my links are also in the bio if you want to contact me. And now for our conclusion. And we're back, and Estelle Park's going to tell some of the changes that happened because Cameron was here and that God had touched his life.
Yes. Well, ripples there have been. But Cameron was in the spa with me in water again when he actually told me, Mum, I don't have long to live. And he went through his life and forgave people for things they'd done to him and planned how he wanted his funeral. So when he died, we knew how to have it. We had it all worked out for us by Cameron. But when he had said that to me, I was thinking to myself, more to comfort myself, I think, than anything else, well, maybe he means he's not going to live to be really, really old. He's not going to be 95 or something. Maybe he's going to go home to heaven when he's perhaps 60 or 65. I didn't think he was going home to heaven at 14. But anyway, I thought, well, if he goes home when I'm 60 or 65, that won't be all that dreadful for me, and probably not for him either, because he always talked about going home to heaven, because I'll be gone by then and I won't have to wait all that long and Cameron will come. Well, no, that's not how it worked out. From the minute he told me that he didn't have long to live, he had 1 week to live, and he died 1 week later to the minute.
Oh.
But unfortunately, it was in a car accident, and his brother, who was then 18, was the driver, and it has impacted his life just so much. His brother now, even though he's a grown man with children of his own, 6 of them, he carries the grief of it still just like a greatcoat. It's sort of what has transformed his life, losing Cameron. You know, it wasn't his fault, but he blames himself so dreadfully. And it breaks my heart to see how he's sort of, yes, he's a multimillionaire businessman, but he's been just so, I don't know, driven, I guess, throughout his life. Anything he does, he throws everything into it. I think he's trying to live his life and Cameron's all at the one time, you know, and it's
I think that it's an important thing to mention that in amongst his story. Although Cameron's life was amazing, it still was a terrible tragedy that your family had to live through. You were comforted in ways that a lot of people don't ever know that level of comfort, but it has ripples that have made your other son's life very difficult.
Yes.
The grief is
not only difficult, but very different to how it would have been, because before Cameron was killed, or just before Cameron was killed, my older son Toddy and Cameron and my husband all started a ministry called the Tribe of Judah, and they used to minister to the bikies. My 18-year-old would get up and preach Jesus to the outlaw bikies until he saw his 14-year-old brother killed in front of his face, and Cameron died laughing too, which was just too much for Tony or Toddy. And so when that had happened, my older son stopped preaching to the outlaw bikies and joined them. And I now have the distinction of having raised the Queensland president and national sergeant at arms for the whole of Australia of the outlaw bikies. So that was a very unexpected ripple, let me tell you. Yes.
Could you just slow back a little bit and tell about Cameron smiling just before his death and the mother looking back?
Yes, well, I wasn't there to see it, so I didn't know that that had happened. But Toddy said to me that just before the accident, when the car that was coming was about to slam into the part of the car where Cameron was sitting, Toddy had let go of the steering wheel. He said, "Mum, I was only doing 1 kilometre an hour sideways." He said, "Wasn't much point hanging onto the steering wheel." He said, "The tyre had blown out. The tyre under where Cameron was sitting had blown out." And he said, "There wasn't anything I could do. So hanging onto the steering wheel wasn't helping a lot." So he said, "I let go of the steering wheel and turned around to face Cameron in the back seat as this car's coming to plow into where Cameron was sitting." And he said, "Cameron just looked at me and said, 'I love you, my friend. Goodbye.' Looked at the car coming and just laughed at it." And I said to Toddy, "What?" He laughed. Toddy said, "Yes, Mum, no 14-year-old can die laughing." And I said, "Well, why do you think he was laughing? Did he see the car that was coming to kill him? Or do you think he saw the angel coming to take his hand and take him out of there just immediately before the impact?" And Toddy looked at me and said, "Mummy would have had to have seen the angel. Come on, Mum." So yes. And even though Toddy could come to that point and say, yes, Cameron had seen the angel coming to take him immediately before the impact, he still has not renewed his faith and trust in Jesus. And I'm just hoping that he does, hoping and praying that he does before it's his turn to go. Right. Oh, goodness. But, you know, I mean, God's got us all in his hands, hasn't he? He knew exactly what was going to happen to Cameron. I mean, Cameron's death, even though he told me about it in the spa, I didn't know when it would happen. And I certainly didn't think it would happen a week after his conversation. But his death did not come as a surprise to God, because God actually showed me his welcoming committee 2 nights before Cameron left the earth. And I thought to myself, at the car accident, I thought to myself, I should be able to go down there ready, willing and able to tell his spirit to get back into his body and for him to jump up and run around and be Cameron alive and his usual self. But then I thought to myself, I was looking for where was his spirit to tell it to get into his body, and it was like it just wasn't there. And then God showed me once again, was just like a thunderclap, bang, he just showed me again the welcoming committee that I'd seen on Friday night. And I said to God, "Okay, if heaven was at attention on Friday night, ready to welcome Cameron, who am I to call him back?" Because that was the plan that God had for his life. Cameron's death came as absolutely no surprise to God. He was ready for him. Cameron was ready to go. The welcoming committee was all there, standing in a line and waiting. So, you know, as difficult as it's been for Toddy, and it hasn't been an easy road for my husband either. Well, it hasn't been easy for me. It hasn't been easy for my husband. It hasn't been easy for my daughter. But that was Cameron's choice. That's where he wanted to be. From the time he was 2, he didn't just talk about heaven. He always talked about going home to heaven. So I know where he is. That's something I can't say. I do know where my son lives, obviously, but I don't know minute to minute what he's doing, because he's so busy with his business. He can be here, there, or anywhere. And daughter runs Mission Australia for two whole states in Australia. We've only got seven states. She runs Mission Australia for two of them. So they've both done very, very well in earthly terms, you know. Daughter's got through the, well, you don't, yeah, you do get through it. You don't get over it. You can't sort of jump over it and leap forward, but you have to work your way through it. And she's successfully done that. Mm-hmm. I think writing the book, I think, helped me a lot. Not that I was grieving like Tony at all. No. But I did mention in the book that I didn't hold it against him in any way, shape or form, that he was the one who obviously God had chosen to be driving the vehicle that would lead Cameron home to glory. Well, that's not Toddy's fault. And I know it's been difficult for him, but I wanted him to know that he was not loved any less. He was not adored, appreciated or wanted or included any less than he had been before this accident that caused him so much grief happened. Because, you know, I love him as much as I love my daughter, as much as I love Cameron. Yeah, he's no less than any of the others. And I wanted him to really know that. I felt after the accident that he needed counselling, but he wasn't going, you know, like if you're working your way up to be the Queensland president and the national sarge, you're not going to be sitting down pouring out your life to a counsellor. So I thought maybe if I became a qualified counsellor, he would talk to me. Well, I became a qualified counsellor. Did he talk to me? Not on your life. No. But I thought, well, at least I can observe him through educated eyes. You know, I can watch him and I can know when he's really low and his life's feeling to him like it's not worth living. And, you know, well, I won't say it's because of my counselling qualifications. I'll say it's because of the grace of God that he's still alive and still going forward and still getting there and still being the multimillionaire businessman that he would never have dreamed he could ever be. To this day, he's still going forward. He's still alive, very much alive. Yes, and he's not dead yet, and he's got time still to come back to the Lord and get to know him in a way. Even if it's just 1% of how Cameron knew God, that would please me greatly. Yes.
I have a women's group, and I know there's some people in my group that have had children die at younger ages than you might have expected. Is there anything you could say to any of those mothers, whether it's been 2 weeks or 10 years since their passing? They may not have had the visions that your Cameron saw, but is there anything you can tell them that could encourage or comfort them?
Probably in a word, no, but I'll have a try.
Okay.
I will say, I would like to say to them that however they're feeling now, right now, this minute, is not necessarily how they're going to feel for all their life. It will get better. It will get easier. And if you're a faith-based person, don't throw that away. Don't ever throw away your faith. That is the most precious thing that you have in your life. If you are a faith person, hang on to that faith. Hang on to the fact that God knows what he's doing. Even though you may think, oh, I'll never see my child again. You don't know what God has in store. Your child may very well have gone home to heaven just like Cameron did. You may very well see them again. Look forward to that and make the most of little pluses, little nice things that happen in your life. Don't dwell all the time on the horror of what took your child or the horror of what pain you know or think you know that child went through. Don't blame people. Don't blame God. Don't blame any other person, because in the end, God says, my ways are higher than your ways. And yeah, his ways are higher than mine. His ways were higher than Cameron's. And I'm sure that they're higher than those of the mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters of children who have departed this life may think, because God's God and he does his thing. You know, we sometimes, we think he takes a long time to do stuff. That's because we live in time. He lives in eternity. And God's God, and he does his thing, and it will all work out, you know, in the end. It's like you throw something dirty in the washing machine. Yeah, it'll all come out in the wash. It might be a hard road. It might feel like it's an impossibly hard road, but it will all come out in the end, and you'll say to yourself, I don't know why I cried so much. I don't know why I was so distressed. I don't know why I just felt like I couldn't take one more step. God had it all the time. He has our back. He loves you. He loves each one of us. Nobody is superior to another person. We're all on an equal footing before God. You know, just don't throw away your faith. Don't throw away what makes you happy. Don't think to yourself, oh, I will never laugh again. I will never do anything that pleases me again. How could I be the mother of a dead child and be seen to laugh? Your child would want you to live a happy life, not a life full of grief just because they're not here. If Cameron could come back and sit here with me or on my shoulder or just behind me like his picture, he would say, Mum, be happy. Enjoy your life. Enjoy what time you have. You'll be here quicker than you know, Mother. Just get yourself ready. And when you do get here, we're going to have a blast. We're not going to sit around and play harps and stuff. Oh, no, we're going to be, you know, out flying around in galaxies and all sorts of stuff. But even if you weren't, even if you just went to heaven and sat next to your child, that would be reward enough, you know. But enjoy your life. Enjoy what you've got. Enjoy what makes you happy. And don't dwell all the time on the sorrows that you've been through, because every sorrow makes you stronger if it doesn't kill you. So if you're still alive, just enjoy what you've got. Be thankful for it. And thank God every day for what you have. Develop an attitude of gratitude. That's going to stand you in good stead. And don't take yourself too seriously. Have some kind of humor in your life, because you may well need it. I did. You may need it.
Yes. I want to close on one little story to kind of leave them with that spirit of joy. Could you tell the audience about Cameron's broadcloth shorts?
Yes.
Finish up with that.
Yes. After he had gone to heaven, it was only a couple of days after he'd gone to heaven. Actually, I think it was 5 days. I had gone through the washing. I had washed Cameron's. He had these green and yellow board shorts, and I had washed them. I'd hung them on the line. I'd brought them in. I'd folded them. I'd ironed them. And then I'd put them in his drawer. And then God showed me a vision of Cameron in heaven. And he had the yellow and black T-shirt on that he had worn when he had left the planet and gone to heaven. But he also had these board shorts on. And I said to God, that's not right. He didn't die wearing those board shorts. He had his black jeans on. He should be in heaven with his yellow and black striped T-shirt and his black jeans, because I know where those shorts are. They're in the third drawer of his cupboard. I washed them the other day. I folded them, I ironed them. They're in there. I put them there. And God said to me, are they? You won't find them. Well, did I not turn that cupboard inside out? We took everything out of it. Me and his father took everything out of that cupboard, looked everywhere, couldn't find the board shorts. And my husband, who's a trumpet player, said, by golly, if he's come down and he's stolen my trumpet, he better look out. He's in big trouble. Well, no, the trumpet was still there. It's still here. It's still in the house here now. But the board shorts have never, ever, ever been seen again. Mind you, we did move house about 3 months after Cameron went to heaven, because where we were living meant that it was necessary to go across the accident scene every time we had to go to the shops or go anywhere, really. And it was too much for Toddy. He just hated driving over that accident scene where he'd lost his brother. So we moved, and I thought, I'm going to feel pretty jolly silly if the moving men come and move that wardrobe out from the wall and tuck down behind that wall somehow, some reason, some way, would be the board shorts. Well, I looked, And I waited. No board short, but they did find a wooden cross about 7 inches long that Cameron had made and carved on it just not long before he was killed. So Cameron's cross was there. The board shorts have never been seen, never, ever, ever again. And it's been quite some years since Cameron went to heaven. Well, I know he's there. I know his T-shirt's there. I saw the board shorts there. As for the jeans, I don't know what's happened to them. But I did say to God, okay, so how does this work? How can you take board shorts from, you know, how can Cameron come down here and take his board shorts and go back to heaven with them? That just doesn't make sense. And God said, all the time stuff is coming from heaven down here and stuff's going to heaven. He said, people go to heaven, but he said, healing comes down here. He said, you know, salvation comes from heaven to earth, happiness, gladness, joy, peace. Things come and go. He said, the fact that it happened to be Cameron's board shorts is, you know, it's something in the spirit realm. Don't worry about it. So I have not worried about his board shorts since then. Mind you, we have kept a bit of an eye on the trumpet, but yeah, all in all, it's just been such a journey. Having Cameron being his mother 14 old years has just been such a journey, and I wouldn't swap it for quids.
Oh, wow. It's been amazing talking to you and learning about your son and your faith, and just wonderful. And I suggest the notes will be in the show notes where people can get a hold of this book.
One of the King's Men.
One of the King's Men. Very good.
That's it. Yep. That's my boy. He was one of the King's Men.
For sure. Yeah. And on that note, we're going to sign off. Bye-bye.
See you in the funny papers. Bye-bye for now.